podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Churros y Tacticas podcast. I'm your host, Kian Sobhani, joined by my equal co-host, Diego Lorin, on a Tuesday. Diego is back from the beach and doing some work covering beach football. I'm excited to talk about that with him. But more importantly, the Clásico is coming up. And even though each of us have a game to play from now until the Clásico, and it's a little bit premature to talk about Clásico, we are putting a twist on it. We're starting a new series where we go through and talk about the histories of Real Madrid and Barcelona, era by era, up until present day. Today is the first installment. We are going 1899 to 1928. Of course, 1928 is the first year La Liga came into existence. And Diego and I did have a bit of a misunderstanding heading into this one. I thought we were doing a combined Barca-Real Madrid 11 of that time period. Diego was just going to do a deep dive of the history. And I imagine as we go through this series, it'll get more heated and more heated and more heated because we'll start breaking it down, combined 11s by decade, starting to talk about combined Real Madrid-Barca 11s of like 2009 to 2019. Oof, it's going to be a bloodbath, my God. But that's like 10 episodes away. For now, we're starting 1902 for Real Madrid. That's when they came into existence. Barcelona came into existence 1899. So they have a three-year advantage. So hopefully Diego comes in with some heat. Those 3 years better been pretty good because you guys have 3 years over us, three extra years where you can incorporate your superstars into the discussion. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Diego to the show. Diego, looking tanned, looking great. What's up?
I am looking tanned. I'm looking at myself and the camera here. Yeah, I did pick up a little color down south. We were in Andalusia for the beach soccer Mundialito. Four teams representing the men's division. Those were Spain, Brazil, United Arab Emirates, and Mexico. And for the women's, it was Spain, Portugal, England, and the US of A. And highly entertaining, may I say. It was my second crack at commentating beach soccer, Kian, as you know. 3 weeks ago or so, I did the Euro Beach Soccer League Super Final. That was a lot more intense, more days, 6 days, 8 matches a day. This was 3 days with 4 matches a day. So like half the workload, let's say, and a lot more enjoyable in particular because I got to live the action right, you know, from the stadium itself. And that, you know, as anybody knows, whether you're a journalist, a reporter, a commentator, or a fan, I mean, experience a game from ground zero where the action takes place is a lot more intense, enjoyable, and obviously dynamic, vibrant, call it, give it whatever adjective you want. And so, yeah, this one was great, man. Hugely enjoyable. Some great talent at display, some absolute formidable goals, and just, you know, you can really separate those that are professionals at this game from those that are, like, let's say, the newcomers. And in the case of Brazil and Spain, Portugal as well, I'm talking about both in the men's and the women's division. They were a step ahead of their competitors. It was great. I mean, it was a repeat final for the women's, where Spain managed to just edge out Portugal for the Mundialito final. I say a repeat because it was the final in the Euro Beach Soccer League Super Final as well. Spain won 3-2 on that occasion and 2-1 in Ayamonte, Andalucía. And for the men, it was Spain, Brazil, and you know, Spain lost the final against Italy 3 weeks ago, 5-4 that one ended, and they went on to lose this one as well. It was very close. It ended 7-6 in favor for La Selección, for Brazil, and but Spain went up, you know, three times on the scoreline by double digit or two goal cushion. And each time Brazil was just coming back. And in the end pulled off the 7-6 dramatic win in a pretty, yeah, dramatic and you know, thrilling fashion, I guess you could say, to pick up the Mundialito title, 15 Mundialito titles for Brazil. They are hands down the absolute masters of the game of beach football. Many would say, well, you know, go figure. I think it's obviously the most obvious pick. It all started in Copacabana in 1994. So, you know, we talk about head starts in these 3 years that Barca had over Madrid in this case. But, you know, Brazil, without a shadow of a doubt, gotten not just a head start, but they're just so good at this game. You can tell that they are like a fish in water when it comes to, you know, their maneuvering, not just executing these acrobatic bicycle kicks that seem to defy gravity, but also the way they find each other, the way they, like I said, move over the pitch, find the space, and just banging goals from literally any given angle, any given distance. You can't take your eyes off of the match for a second, because just like that, a goal can be, you know, blasted in even from the goalkeeper themselves. They'll get in on the offensive action a lot. And yeah, it was fun, man. It's entertaining. I gotta say, dude, I enjoy it a lot, because there are three periods of 12 minutes. It's intense. It's fast paced. It's similar to basketball in that regard, which obviously I'm a big fan of. And you know, if football, traditional football nowadays, can kind of be very boring, if I may say so. And I've said this on this pod many times. With the current state of affairs in the game of football, last night I was watching, you know, Greece Holland. It was an absolute fucking snooze. I'm sorry, man. You know, I don't mean to drop F bombs here unnecessarily, but Jesus Christ.
I mean, also, like, the Netherlands are not in their best period.
Sure.
They're missing a ton of players. Xavi Simons, like, I watched the France game. I did not watch the Greece one. I thought, like, Xavi Simons continues to be, like,
yeah,
a bright spot. He's like, sure, one of the guys that, like, makes it a little bit more fun. He actually takes onus to take the game to the opponent, tries to break lines. He's a really brilliant player. Had like a really, like, really, really nice flick against Greece, where he does like a nutmeg kind of like flick.
Have you ever seen that before? That was crazy.
Probably it was seen like, it somewhere, like, but certainly, usually, like, in those situations, I've seen the dummy nutmeg, where the player just lets the ball go through his legs.
Let the ball go. Mm-hmm.
But he actually flicked it on purpose between the legs. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I saw that. I noticed that. That was nice. But other than that, man, it was just not an enjoyable watch. So I enjoy doing this. It's a new experience, you know, a bit of work, a bit of money. And like I said, new frontiers being opened. So
I think the fast-paced nature you were describing of beach football is kind of the reason that sometimes, like, the arcade version of things is often more fun. Like, when we play FIFA with me and my friends, we often, instead of playing the full 11-on-11, there's like that Volta mode where you can go on, like, the futsal courts and play this, like, arcade style with, like, 5-on-5. You can choose kind of the formations, how many players you want on each team. But also, kind of, like, I think it was me and Lucas, we were talking about this, that sometimes the actual sport is not as entertaining as, like, the variations of it or, like, different levels of it. Like, in college basketball, for example, if you watch a college basketball Final Four game and then go and watch an NBA game, like, right after, it's like going from
regular season NBA
to a classical concert. Like, it's just different. You know what I mean? But then obviously when you get to the NBA playoffs, it's a different kind of atmosphere and different kind of intensity. I imagine, like, beach football and futsal can be kind of the same idea. It's a little bit more fast paced, a little bit more intense, shorter bursts of explosive action.
Yeah.
I gotta ask, like, does every team in the tournament, are they just by default a warmer country? Like, will you ever see, does Canada have a team?
You know what? Canada, well, the U.S. has now formed a team. The women's team, as I said, was there. But Russia is actually ranked, if I'm not mistaken, third, if not even second in the world rankings. Russia has been dominating. So that's been like the last 6, 7, 8 years or so that Russia's really exploded onto the scene of beach soccer. The thing is that since the Ukraine conflict, they've not been allowed to partake in any of the tournaments because of the sanctions. So they are suspended from these tournaments. Otherwise, Russia would have been in the mix for sure. Yeah, they're a powerhouse. I was surprised too, though.
Have you been watching any of the international games? I imagine you were just kind of busy with the beach football.
No, I did. I watched both Holland, France, and Holland,
Greece,
and I watched Spain, Norway. And did I watch Spain? What was the other one?
It was Spain, Norway, and the one before that was Scotland, the 2-0.
Spain, Scotland, right, right. So actually, I missed out on the vast majority of that, the Spain, Scotland.
There's actually enough for us to talk about if we just talked about current affairs. Like, the Scotland game had a bit of controversy. The Norway game was interesting. There's like today, there's two games that I'm going to watch that I'm really looking forward to. One is Italy and England.
Oh, yeah, I'll watch them.
And tonight, I mean, this is going to be, the time difference will be crazy for you, but Uruguay-Brazil is going to be bonkers, I think, I predict.
It'll be a good watch.
Yeah.
In England, Italy, they are, well, I can check myself, but do you know where they're sitting in the standings? Or
England can basically qualify. I think with a draw, I mean, a win, I think, ensures it. Italy have to win, I think.
Okay.
Well, let me pull it up. Like, I know that Italy's situation is much more desperate than England's. But let me just.
And Italy have got, they've got some amends to make as well after obviously falling short.
Yeah. So. Italy, England are first with 13 points. Italy are second with 10. They're tied with Ukraine, but they do have a game in hand. But if they lose to Italy, they could be in a bit of trouble. Because then they'll essentially be tied with Ukraine on points. And, you know, it could be tricky for them. So, I think they'll be safe because they have... the tiebreaker on Ukraine for now, but and the rest of the game should be easy for them. But anyways, it should be interesting. I'm going to be watching that.
And what did you make of the? Let's. I mean, take some minutes here to focus on Spain. I don't like Luis de la Fuente's approach to this team, and I don't. I know that maybe that's going against the Madridista grain or the narrative that I'm picking up from Madrid, or at least the Madrid-based newspapers that are hailing Luis de la Fuente. The Marca and Us couldn't get enough of it on the following day, saying the solidity is back. He has won over the dressing room. This is it. It was, for me, it was painful to watch these two games as well, despite the fact, obviously, I was happy and for Gabi and his individual performance, but I you know, the other, like, the takeaway that I got from all of the games, but in particular, you know, I was excited for Spain, Norway, and I was excited to see, you know, Ansu in the starting lineup, and I was excited to see Haaland finally face a team like Spain. And I'm like, you know, it was the thing that I appreciate about beach soccer, I guess, is that you really see the stars come out, and you see the individual brilliance shine on this stage as well, on these platforms. And I was disappointed with Haaland, and I was disappointed with Spain collectively, even though obviously the result is good. And yes, you know, we're not qualified, but I'm just left wanting more, man. I'm just left wanting more. And I was curious about your impressions, because again, reading the newspapers, it was like, I felt like these people had watched a whole different match altogether.
That's interesting. So I don't really have too many complaints with the way Spain played. I mean, I think they deserve to win both of those games. And from a selfish Madridista standpoint, it's just really nice to see Fran Garcia get minutes at the national team level, because he's not playing much with us. And I'm just kind of worried about his development stalling. I don't really have much issue with the way Spain are playing. The one game that I was really blown away that they just got outplayed was the Scotland game. But I told you this when it happened, that I'm out on...
Bit of a robbery, that one. Sorry.
Which one? The one that Scotland won or the one that Spain won? I can't remember. What was it?
Well, there was a bit of controversy there with the penalty that Spain got, and some penalty claims for Scotland that didn't go that way.
Either way, Scotland like were just a better team that day. And but I told you this when it happened. I'm out on De La Fuentes no matter what. Even if he wins 200 World Cups before he dies, the moment he clapped for Luis Rubiales, I was like, I'm out on this guy. I'm out, not supporting him anymore. So I, you know, it has nothing to do with Maridista or not. But I don't know. The team looks fine. There's a nice injection of a lot of young players in this team, and you know, it's a nice mix of players. I think it's fine.
You think that this team has what it takes to push for like to be title contenders in this upcoming Euros?
I don't think they have the ceiling of like a France, for example. But we've seen this with Spain a lot. I mean, we saw it recently in the last World Cup, but also the European Championship before that. That they can also beat anyone, despite not being the favorite, because they have a degree of control in the ball. They have really good runners. They have a really good midfield. So I could see them going toe-to-toe with anybody. But they don't have the ceiling and the superstar firepower as some of the other teams. But I don't see why they can't make a deep run, to be honest.
I guess it's the same old story in a way of
a little bit.
They don't have that reference point in the forwards. They don't have a Torres. They don't have a Villa. They've got an age Morata who...
Who's playing well, to be fair?
He scored against Scotland.
He's playing well. Like, and that the thing is, they don't have that star, Diego, but they just have a lot of really good players who know how to play, and they have a lot of depth. And I think that goes a long way, too. So...
Are you starting Oyarzabal or Ansu?
Are those my only two options right now? I mean, Oyarzabal's not having a great season, I don't think. Where do you...
Ansu was not great against Norway, and it pains me to say.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know really. I haven't followed Ansu at halftime pretty much. How he's doing this season.
Yeah. No, but even for like De La Fuente, I mean, he was subbed off and like halftime pretty much. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's I think it's unfortunate how his career is panning out, and even given the opportunities, like you said, with Brighton, I know he scored a goal. He's had a handful of chances that he has missed. But, you know, throughout the 90 minutes, I'm not sure about his aportación, about what he brings to the English side. But for Spain, it leaves you, remembering the good old days, which is hard to say about a kid that is, what is he, like 20, 19?
Is a bit crazy to say, maybe. I don't know. Hmm. But because, like, the third, like, right now he has Morata and Ferran, right? Let's just assume, I don't think this is true. I think it's way too early to know exactly. But let's assume that those are two starting spots taken. That third one is kind of underwhelming to me. If this was Oyarzabal of 3 years ago, it would be a much more exciting choice. But let's say if it's like, Why not put Yamal?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, he was injured, obviously, for these.
Just a general point, though. But like,
yeah.
Why not go with the box midfield? You could squeeze in Rodri, Pedri when he's healthy, Gavi. You could still put Fabian in there. You could bring in Ceballos. You could also do Brahim on one of the wings. Brahim's played well for Real Madrid this season. There are options that he has. I don't know if you would look at these options seriously, but one of the options could be just copying the box midfield and going with four midfielders and then Morata and Ferran up top. That could be an option.
You think it was down to Spain? Like, do you give credit to the Laportes, et cetera, the back line for canceling out Haaland? Or are you one of those that is like concerned about both his current run in the Premier League as well as
Who,
from
Haaland? No,
Norway?
I think people who are concerned about Haaland are out of their mind, quite frankly. Man, like, we're so fickle as football fans. The guy, like, won 20 trophies, scored 3 million goals, and then he has, like, a little bit of a patch where he's not scoring, and I was, oh, he's not as good as we thought. It's like, he can't really do that much on his own. I'm not saying Norway are, like, as bad as, like, Pakistan, who just won, I think, a qualifier for the first time yesterday or something like that. I don't
Oh
know why
shit.
Pakistan is catching strays in this podcast, but
Seriously, throwing randoms in
I
here.
they came to my
It's a
mind because
curve.
I literally just saw a stat that they won like their first qualifier. It's not like Norway are like just like this terrible team, but like they're also not. Don't have the ability to control the game and generate a huge abundant amount of offensive chances for Haaland to take advantage of. So I'm not going to begin to pin blame on Haaland in a situation like that. I've seen some extreme takes on football Twitter about Haaland, which are just out of this world.
Were you surprised? I mean, with somebody like Odegaard, though, not being able to connect with the big man.
Yeah.
Again, did you pin that to what's your name? Le Normand and the Laporte central defensive duo of Spain, or?
I think it's just a combination of like, this is my assessment of it. I think it was, I like the amount that Odegaard actually got in the ball and his passing was generally good. But I didn't think he had that many opportunities to play the killer ball, the way Norway were set up and the way Spain were set up. That's my assessment. I also thought Laporte and like just was really good. The thing is, I kind of like I'd be curious to know what your main criticism of Spain is. Is it that it's not like what is it? Like is what when you say you don't like the approach?
I just don't think it's as entertaining to watch. It's clear that Spain is still opting for possession. It's clear that Spain still, if we look at the Norway game, deserved the win, created more chances, scored two goals with one narrowly being disallowed. But I'm not really feeling it. I'm not connecting with it, with this squad. Very much. And neither was I necessarily at a particular point with Lucho, and that might have to do with the fact that there's just some that final piece of the puzzle in the front line is missing, you know?
But I think some of that has to do with the fact that we were accustomed like one generation ago
Sure,
to one of the
sure.
greatest teams we've ever seen.
Sure.
And so like these guys are not there. Xavi's not there, Iniesta's not there, Villa's not there, Ramos is not there, Piqué's not there. And like not even though like we had just so many great role players like beyond them, whether it was players like Isco or Carvajal at his peak. And like we just had so many good players. I say we like I kind of go
You
back
always
and forth.
said.
Sometimes I say we, sometimes I say Spain. It's not necessarily we, but you know what I mean. Like, but it's just like I don't think we have those players anymore to play like that every game. And that's why Lucho's iteration of Spain was just a little bit different stylistically. And I don't know, like sometimes you just need the players, man.
But you have a Rodri, you have Gavi. Obviously, Pedri is injured. And Fabian Ruiz is a skilled player, but is in my books not a Pedri. But I do have hope that a trident like that in the midfield
You know what concerns me
can be
more?
that.
It's like, can we just see Pedri play football, man? Like, holy crap. I hate the fact that we just don't see him play. Like, it sucks. And that worries me. Like, is he going to be available for the Euros? Hope so, man.
Let's see if he's available for the Clásico. I don't know, man.
Give me the updates on the Clásico.
Nacho will play. Nacho is gonna play.
Nacho will
Just a
play.
two-match ban.
Yeah. If it were
Not
me,
through.
I would also appeal to and ask Barca to play with nine players. I don't feel like we bribed them enough for that one.
Agree. As silly as it is, that is one update.
Now, can
But
real
you
talk on
mean.
that for a second? My honest opinion on that is that, like, 'cause I know a lot of Barca fans are upset about that, and I don't blame them. And they continually bring up the fact that Lewandowski got three matches for the nose thing. I don't think Lewandowski should have even gotten one game for that. Like
That was crazy.
that's just the refs being butthurt that, like, Lewandowski, like, just like he didn't like I don't think he should have been suspended at all. I also don't while I don't necessarily think Nacho's ban should have been shortened. I also don't really know if that was a three match ban. That tackle was like a three match worthy ban either. I don't know, but I understand. I just want to say
Well,
I understand the Barca
yeah.
fan frustration on this particular subject.
I understand it, and what I would say is, like, again, it comes down to whether it's like, what's the criteria? You know what I mean? If that is 2 matches, which I think we can all agree on this as well, it was a very dangerous tackle. It was a very hard committed tackle from Nacho that could have caused a lot of damage. If that's 2 from now on, then let's go with 2. But let's not next week give a player, a 4-3-4 match ban for a similar tackle.
There needs to be consistency.
There has to be this fucking consistency, man. It's very frustrating. I don't want to, let it get to me or let it get me riled up. And there's way more different things going on in the world that need people to get properly angry about, and me for one, I've made the decision to kind of stay away from the drama just for peace of mind. I kind of need to focus on positives, and with so many negatives around that are unescapable these days, because as soon as you open your phone or flip on the TV, there's just constant bad vibes coming your way, negative energies, and so yeah, I've kind of like I'm gonna refrain from partaking in these debates on Twitter, where I already told you, but this Nacho one being a latest one that certainly kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But I'm like, take 10 breaths, put the phone away, and look forward to talking to Kian about the illustrious histories of our two clubs, one starting in 1899, 1902, and take it from there and But consistency and clarification would be very much appreciated for everybody, coaches, players, and fans alike.
I can't imagine the scenes if Nacho scores in the Clásico.
Oh
Like,
my God.
could you imagine the scenes?
Yeah.
I'll sign up for it though. But
Sure.
one more thing before we get to that thing that we said that this podcast was about that we haven't talked about. I have to just give 10 seconds on Cristiano Ronaldo.
What's up with your boy?
He is now the highest goal scorer in 2023. More goals than Haaland, more goals than Mbappe. And he has now scored at least 100 goals in three different decades, which is mind-blowing statistic to me. And also, for 10 years straight, this was just something that was brought to my attention. This part is nothing new. But he averaged 55 goals per year for 10 years. And
Wow.
I just wanted to give like an ode to Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, that's just, I don't care. Like, even if he's playing in Saudi, even if he's Well, that's it. Even if he's playing in Saudi, the fact that he's 38 and doing this is incredible. Because when I'm 38, I'll probably be like eating cake somewhere and accomplishing nothing. So, respect.
God damn, boy, how the fuck, how young are you when I'm 38? Fucking Mr. 42 sitting over here. I'm thinking that when I'm 38, oh
I
no, I'm
turned
40.
36 on the day of the Clásico. So I don't know how this happens, but every single year on October 28th, I have a Clásico on my birthday. My
Yeah,
birthday
what?
is always Clásico day. So
It's funny how that always is, huh?
I always either have a terrible birthday or a great birthday every single year, which is great. It's a curse that God has given me. So
Well, I for one can't wait. It's 2 weeks away. Montjuic it is. Let's hope we can get as many players fit for that one as possible because yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man.
Oh
I'm
yeah,
looking
we
forward
forgot
to
to address that. So what are the updates on
Right,
all your players?
updates. I got no fucking clue. Let's go check it out on the transfer
Well, everyone can do that. So the list of players is Lewandowski, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Pedri, maybe.
Maybe. Looks like
Is that
Araujo, I
it,
guess,
actually?
will. Let's see. I mean, Rafinha, I think, is still injured.
Did Araujo
Lamine
go with
Yamal is
Uruguay
injured.
to.
I don't. I gotta plead ignorance, my friend. I
Oh,
do
yeah, you
not
don't work
know.
for Barca anymore.
No. So here we go. Koundé is injured.
Oh,
Balde
yeah,
is
Koundé.
injured.
Balde.
Yes. Yeah. He didn't play for Spain.
That's right.
Lamine Yamal is injured. Rafinha is injured. Lewandowski is injured. Pedri is injured. Sergio Roberto is injured. Frankie de Jong is injured. Jesus Christ! We might as well fucking just not
Oh,
play this
stop.
game.
Stop it,
Oh
man.
my
Stop.
God, dude! Are you kidding?
Just as a
Did you hear what I
reminder.
said? Did you hear what I said? Koundé,
I don't want to
Balde,
hear it. No, I don't want to hear
Pedri,
the excuses.
Frankie de Jong, Rafinha, Lamine Yamal, and Lewandowski, and you're saying no excuses. I'm not. There's no excuses. This is fact. This
I
is
know it's a
injuries.
fact, but I just don't want to
Okay.
hear complaints. Just as a reminder, Courtois and Militao are out for the season. Our best defender and our best goalkeeper, the guy who literally saves our ass, is they're out. And don't want to hear it. All right.
This is not nice. I don't. I, if this is gonna be the fucking state of affairs come Clásico, I might not even watch it.
Come
This is
on.
ridiculous. This is fucking ridiculous, man. Did you hear the list I just read out?
First of all, we don't know what the situation will be on the 28th, which is still a long time away. So let's just pump the brakes and see what happens then. Players will miraculously recover, and God forbid, maybe Real Madrid will also lose their players too. There's a lot of time left for a lot of things to happen. So let's wait.
Well, seeing as the last time we faced each other, we were able to beat you after a serious case of diarrhea. There's always hope, I guess.
There you go.
There's always hope.
There you go. There. See, I didn't even need to say anything to make you feel better about yourself. You did it all by yourself.
Aren't you proud?
Very proud. So I'm very excited to vehemently debate against you with our players versus your players
Yes.
from 1899 to 1928.
This is going to be fun.
So why don't you give me a brief history? I guess, oh, well, let me just set up some context for the listeners. Football was obviously very different back then.
Really? You say
Many of the
what?
rules that exist today didn't exist back then. For example, goalkeepers were allowed to handle the ball outside the box up until 1912, I think it was. There were no such thing as like offsides, or sorry, offsides from throw-ins. That wasn't banned until 1920. So you could throw it to anyone and they could be standing anywhere. And there was just like I often tell this story. When Arthur Johnson came to Real Madrid, he came at a time where like there was no order, there was no coach. The players would be in an official Real Madrid game, it was called Madrid FC back then, they would pick the starting lineup, like as the referee was like, okay, let's start. Like the whistle was about to blow, they would be like, okay, you play here, you play here, you play there. The goalkeeper would sit in a lawn chair and drink beers. And then when an attack came, he would throw his lawn chair in the net, stand up, and try to save it. This is Real Madrid. It's incredible. Like, it's really, really fascinating.
I like that image.
Yeah. And so Arthur Johnson came in, like, with these revolutionary ideas and was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to decide the starting lineup before the game starts. And we're not going to have lawn chairs for the goalkeeper. Like, he has to be alert and awake and ready to go. And I went through for my book and actually asked Real Madrid's archive department to do a deep dive for me and find some more information about who scored, what was the match log, and they don't even have most of the information. We don't know the exact scores of some of the games. We also don't know who scored in those games. So we don't even have accurate goal scoring statistics. That's the kind of era we're talking about here. So I just wanted to give some context.
Well, I thought you'd start your context or your history lesson with the fact that one of your two founders was a Catalan, you know, like that was everybody knows, I feel knows and always makes fun of the fact that Barça was founded by a Swiss, Johan Gamper. But I feel like not enough people or not enough times, it's not reiterate enough times the fact that the first president for Real Madrid was a Catalan. And I think
and that you still is hate
just
us.
Lovely. And you I think that's lovely. Us. Oh, he's probably a perico, so.
The thing is, like, back then, like, this is, back then also, Diego, it was more of like a casual football team than an official.
Yeah, of course. You know?
Like, La Liga didn't exist until 1928. Like, yeah. Real Madrid and Barcelona almost never played against each other. Like, the Copa del Rey was essentially three teams. It was Real Madrid, Athletic Club, and Espanyol. It was like a three-team tournament.
Yeah.
We would never go far to play Barcelona, like, all the way over there. Like, it just never would happen.
The infrastructure, the costs, it was very complicated. I did find some very interesting information on DAZN or DAZN, whatever, .com. Mm-hmm. Do you know when the first Clásico was played? Played?
Probably, but I can't remember.
So it was the
1911?
1902, my friend, the year that you guys were found. Okay. Yeah, founded.
Didn't know that.
It was the Copa Coronación of 1902, mm-hmm. and Barça were invited on the 13th of May 1902 on a Tuesday to play in front of 2,000 spectators, which was the first time, the first recorded Madrid-Barça, or Barça-Madrid, in this case, Madrid-Barça. Mm-hmm. I have the starting 11s, which include both of our founders. There's at least for Palacios in your case and Gamper in ours. And the result was 3-1 Barça with Viti Meyer, Arthur Johnson scoring for you guys.
Yeah,
the one goal,
the great one, and, of the greats,
and a brace by Viti Meyer, and Udo Steinberg for another goal by Udo Steinberg for Barça, a squad that had 6 foreign players, including Joan Gamper, and so yeah, that was the first recorded Clásico. Now, as you mentioned, there was no national league, and these two teams didn't start playing more competitively and consistently against each other until the start of La Liga, which you said was 1928-29. I think it was 29-30 actually, Kian. I'm not. I think the first league campaign 29-30.
I thought it was 28-29, but...
Because Barça, from my research, won the first edition of La Liga. But now we're jumping until the end. But at least from what I found, the 1929 league, which started on the 10th of February of 1929 and finished on the 23rd of June of 1929, was won by Barça in the following league campaign.
Yeah, 1929.
Was won by Maggi. Actually, that is incorrect. It's 31-32. So
Go ahead.
No, so the 31-32 Lee campaign, which started November 22nd of 31 and finished the April 3rd of 32, was won by Real Madrid. But I don't know if there was a league campaign in between, as in, you know, like 31-30, 30-31.
Just 31. No, there was. So what happened was, the reason why we kind of chose 1928 as the cutoff for this particular exercise was because that was the last year
before
it was, like, before that, it was nothing official. 1929 is the first campaign. Barca wins it. And then it goes on for...
There must be 1930, like a similar format. Because 1929 was just in 1 year, as I just read out. So it must have been similar for 1930 before the 31-32 campaign was over the stretch of, let's say, you know, over the course of two different years.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, so...
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is starting out well.
No, it's actually really interesting. Like, no one is going to just walk through this and get it all right seamlessly. It was literally 400 years ago. But it did, that one did conclude in 1929. And it's partly because I think it started early and it ended in the summertime, like in June.
Yeah. So February it started and then June it finished.
Yeah. Whereas the other ones were kind of over the system that we have now, which is over the course of two calendar years. So 1929 to 1930, that's one season and so forth. Then of course, like way beyond that, there's a 3 year hiatus because of the Civil War, but that's beyond that, the time range we're covering. So
starting chronologically, no, I think the first, so there was, as you pointed out, Kian, I'll just jump in here, kind of run with it. And then you jump in where you see fit but what you pointed out at the beginning, I think, is crucial. The fact that domestically teams didn't play much against each other. There was more regional, it was more of a regional campaigns, competitions that clubs would partake in. So Barca would predominantly play in Copa Catalunya's. Madrid, on the other hand, played more within the region of Madrid. Campeonato de Madrid, I believe it was called, or the Campeonato Regional de Madrid. And from the start, from the get-go, I would say both Barca and Madrid were very successful regionally. Barca going on to win, you know, the vast majority. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the regional Catalan championships, along with Copa de Catalunyas and Super Copa de Catalunyas. Sorry, no, that's much later. Scratch that. Whereas Madrid was very successful from its inception in the Campeonato de Madrid, winning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as well. I think what is more interesting, though, was that could be considered more of a league campaign or a domestic campaign was the Copa del Reyes. And there, Madrid came out of the gates flying in your favorite competition, Kian, because you guys went on to win that. You guys had a bit of a stronghold. You went on to win that four times back-to-back-to-back-to-back. And it wasn't until 1910... after the first decade that Barca started to win the Copa del Rey competition. And those were also, you know, the few times that a Barca and Madrid would face each other in those kind of competitions.
Yeah. And when you mentioned Arthur Johnson as, the goal scorer in that first Clásico, I did know that the first Clásico was at that time, because I literally just pressed Control F in my book and I literally wrote about it. I just forgot.
Okay.
But the funny thing about that is that it was not only the first Clásico, it was also the first official Real Madrid game at that tournament. And one of the first Real Madrid games in history. And Arthur Johnson also is regarded as the first goal scorer in Real Madrid history. It's kind of fuzzy because there's the official game and then there's the first game. Arthur Johnson is noted with the first as the first goal in Real Madrid history. And throughout all these years, like I actually, again, like I did this exercise a little bit differently than you, and then I actually came in with a combined Real Madrid-Barcelona 11 that is irrefutable, indisputable.
That's cool. You have to read that out, yes or yes.
Yeah, I will. But there's two stars that we had during that time that are noteworthy. One is Arthur Johnson, and the other one is Santiago Bernabéu Yeste, who, of course, the stadium is named after, and he was one of the more iconic presidents. But also notably and often forgotten, he was a really good striker and was the main goal scorer of his time for Real Madrid. And here's a stat that will blow you away. Santiago Bernabéu scored 2 hat-tricks in 2 separate Clásicos. And to this day, he is one of only 3 players to do so.
Wow.
Can you guess the other two?
Messi.
Yeah.
Cristiano.
Nope, he never did it.
Give me a minute, huh? I will know.
Maybe. He is one of the greatest strikers in football history, but he did not play for your team.
Should he have? Was he almost going to?
No.
It's not Di Stefano.
Not Di Stefano.
Okay. All right. I don't know. Go ahead.
Puskas.
Okay.
Yeah. So Puskas, Messi, and Bernabéu are the only 3 players in football history to have scored 2 hat tricks in 2 separate Clásicos. So here's my 11. Combined 11, Real Madrid and Barcelona combined. They're all Real Madrid players. This is indisputable, irrefutable. It's not up for debate. The formation is a 0-3-1-3-3. At first, I didn't have a goalkeeper. I was just gonna. It was just defenders. It was no defenders and no goalkeepers. It was just midfielders and attackers. But what I decided to do was put Arthur Johnson in nets because he actually played as both goalkeeper and striker. So Arthur Johnson. And I just realized I have one extra player, so I'm going to scratch the least noteworthy player. Okay. So no defenders, 1 goalkeeper. So I'll go 0-3-1-3-3. My 3 midfielders are Sotero, Aranguren, who is the first symbol, like the Sergio Ramos of his time. He has a statue at Valdebebas. When you walk in, you'll see his statue there. Then we got Feliciano Rey, who can score goals from midfield. Alberto Machin Barena. He's the captain. He had 8 appearances for Real Madrid. They all came in the cup. Ricardo Alvarez. Then we have Rene Petit, who has an iconic goal where in the 1917 Spanish Cup final, he dribbles the whole team and scores. That's the equalizer, and then later Real Madrid win the game. Up top, Jose Maria, who was arguably the MVP in the 1917 Copa. He had 4 goals, including the game winner versus España FC in the semifinals. Santiago Bernabéu as the main striker. Antonio Neira behind him, who's been in 3 Copa Finals, won 2 of them. Armando Giroud and Manuel Posada. I don't know how many players that is now. I may have done 12, 13, or 8. I'm not sure. But that's the list, and they're all Real Madrid players.
I was going to say, that's all Madridistas. Well, I'm surprised you don't have a Paulinho Alcantara in there, one of the most legendary and honored by the club, a prolific goal scorer of the time.
Can't do it in big games.
He was sick off the dribble. Listen, there's no way that you can refute the mere fact that you are missing on players the likes of I'm a little bit surprised you don't have Zamora in there though. Ricardo Zamora.
That was a mistake actually. But the thing is
Paulinho Alcántara. But Paulinho Alcántara and Ricardo Zamora they were just amazing. He was an exceptional goalkeeper and actually later joined Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And
Zamora didn't join us until 1930. But he was with you guys till 1922 and then went to Espanyol.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, those two should have been in there. You didn't name Palacios. He was a player president. I think that you would have given him an honorary role.
He was one of the players I scratched off because I had too many players.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Alfredo Massana, Ame Chazurra, Paco Bru, Jack Greenwell, you know, he became a coach later as well in 1917. Joan Gamper, you know, come on. Our creator, our president, who unfortunately committed suicide in 1930, marking an end to his legacy as a foundational figure of the club. But we had heat men. We won endless amounts of Copa Catalunyas. We won six Copa del Reyes.
Who were you guys playing against? Pyrenees. How many teams were in that?
In the Copa Catalunya?
Yeah.
I think it was 10.
Was it just you guys?
No, I think there were 10.
Inter-squad scrimmage?
Can I find out how many teams? I think I read 10 somewhere.
Mm. Wow. I'm
gonna fish it up. Yeah, a whole 10. And we laid the foundation to the golden era that was about to be bestowed upon us. That's it, man. I mean, the four Pyrenees Cups, the victory of the, but then we're already crossing into the first league campaign. But you know, winning the inaugural Spanish league campaign, thought was pretty cool. But I kind of left that for the next period. This one, it was tough, obviously, just the, in particular when it came to comparing the two. I later upon my research found a page where it has actually each season with the amount of games played and goals scored, and I was going to see if I could do a comparison from a goal scoring perspective between the two teams. But I would say that the success, or let's say, yeah, it was pretty similar from a head-to-head perspective in terms of the trophies we won, the types of trophies. In your case, the what did I say it was called? The Campeonato de la Región de Madrid and the Copa Catalunyas, or the Campeonato de Catalunya. It seems like there was pretty much a balanced affairs at the two clubs at the time. I would say that you guys were maybe more equipped and better came off to a better start given the Copa del Rey titles that you guys won 4 years in a row. So maybe the edge you could argue has Real Madrid in terms of a team that is stronger, that was more prepared to play additional competitions besides just the regional competitions that both our clubs were partaking in. And yeah, it was, and that's kind of it. But we take the first Clásico. I'm happy with that too.
This is a great, great little appetizer before we have to start debating who starts in midfield between Iniesta, Modric, Cruz. and Xavi.
I like how you said Alcantara there had a weak foot. Not up to scratch in the big games.
And it's once you do the deep dive, you realize that these players had imperfections, just like the players of modern day. And much like Barca's DNA is now, just can't cut it in big games. But you guys could pass the ball to death against small Spanish teams. But you can't, once you came up against the Giants, it was just a different kind of mentality that you guys lacked.
You're talking absolute shit. And Paulinho Alcantara deserves definitely. If you like your history, you should look him up a little bit. He was all right. Could do a thing or two.
Did he have any relation to Thiago? No, I'm serious. Like sometimes you just get like they're like descendants. Like you know, like Marcos Llorente is like uncle, our great grandfather, our grandfather. I can't remember, it was Paco Gento.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if the family Alcantara, you know, if he, if they had or you know roots in Brazil, then I guess. I mean, his name is Paulinho Alcantara. I mean, it's possible, right? He was from the Philippines, though. Originally Filipino.
Yeah, interesting. And Real Madrid had a lot of Cuban players. It's very interesting, and it's like it's just really cool. Like when you progress through history, the eras of like different kinds of nationalities. Of course, in like the 50s, we were able to sign a bunch of international players, and then they had the rule. They changed the rule in the 60s. On foreign players, and you were only allowed to have like a couple. And basically, because of that, like Real Madrid went into the Yaya era, which is basically the 60s version of Quinta del Buitre, where they promoted the entire youth team. Everyone was Spanish. And it's kind of interesting to kind of track those different eras. So you'll have like a diverse period, and then you'll have an all Spanish period, and it kind of fluctuates. Diego,
what would you say from that time was sort of the best era? Like if I were looking at it now, like the golden age, yeah, from the beginning until 1928. Like for me it would be looking at it now, you're like from 23 to 29, including 29, obviously winning. So let's say 28.
Yeah.
Barca winning the Copa del Rey there, dominating. Yeah, the Copa del Rey is dominating the Campeonats de Catalunya, even though they went through like political repercussions, because in 1925, the crowd at Les Corts jeered the Spanish national anthem, leading to a stadium closure for how long? For 6 months, and Gamper's resignation eventually. That I think was the more, probably the standout period or the standout years of those early years of the early three decades for Barca since its inception in 1899, given the fact that, yeah, it took quite a while before Barca started to win, again, the Copa del Rey victories. Although most notably here from 1910 to 1930, that's when also Barca started winning Copa del Rey. But I would say from the three decades, 23 to 28, 29 would be the most successful of those three decades.
I don't know, man. Like asking me,
like when did you win? Like the most cups won.
Diego, I don't know if you realize what you're asking me, but asking me what's the best period Real Madrid had from 1902 to 1928 is a bit like asking like what was the best game of FIFA I played in 2002 on Nintendo 64.
I'm just saying, like console. Looking at like, your trophy, I'll do it for you. I'll do it for you.
But I'm telling you, like we played eight games a year. Like it, I have no idea. Like, I guess like towards probably the end of the eras because we started to play more games. Like for example, the first season we played more than 8 games was 1926. So I'll go with that one because we doubled the amount of games we played. We played 16 games instead of 8, and we scored 38 goals and we won the championship. I guess it's that one.
Okay. I think you're underestimating those early years, man. From like again, 1905 to
Yeah, bro,
1908.
but look at this. Okay, we won the double in the 1904-1905 season. We won the double. Guess how many games we played that season?
All right. Okay. Come
One.
on.
One game. So
You're
I don't
kidding.
even know how we won a double.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Maybe I don't know. I
That's
think it was because it was like
this
one.
is a pointless exercise.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. But what what would be great is that we'll tell our
How did you
social
play
media.
one game?
We'll tell our social media guy, Hismedi, if you're listening to this, clip this, but make it like super serious. So post it on TikTok. It's like this enraged debate about which season was better, 1904 or 1905. No, hold on here. Here it is. Three, two. Hismedi, clip this. Three, two, one. Bro, Real Madrid 1905 to 1906, we scored 7 goals in one game. We won the double. That is greater than anything Barcelona has achieved in their history. There it is, TikTok clip.
Well, I'll refute that by saying that
How
Barca,
many times is Alcantara going to
listen to
choke in a
me.
big game?
That is absolute sheer and utter bull. You need to pay respects to Alcantara and place the importance, the significance of the fact that Barca had re in regional dominance for many, many years for the Campeonato de Catalunya and the Copa del Reyes. Okay, you could argue most notably between 1910 until 1913, but on top of that, we also won prestigious tournaments like the Pyrenees Cup and other international competitions several times, man, several times. And I'm not, that's even before getting into the golden age of 1923 to 1929, because there, I mean, it's game, set, and match, bro. It's over. It's over. On top of all the political repercussions that we were facing, we were winning Copa del Rey titles back to back to back. We achieved significant success in the Campeonato de Catalunya, Copa del Rey titles, and we were dominating Spanish football. It's over, and I'm done with it.
Now tell me what happened when the European Championship was introduced. Where did all those games you played against Spanish teams, dominating teams in Catalonia, what happened when you had to go into the European stage? 1955, 1956, 1957, 1958. Where was Alcantara? Disappeared.
The poor man was retired.
That's the difference between Alcantara and Cristiano Ronaldo. If he had it taken care of himself like Cristiano did, he would have been playing until he was 60. Difference in mentality. Rest in peace, Alcantara. Nothing but respect, my guy.
Boy.
I have another podcast starting soon, bro. We're going to talk about the Beckham documentary over on the Managing Madrid
Dude,
podcast.
I meant to ask you about that.
Yeah. I've only
We're
seen
actually
one
on to the
episode.
last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen the first episode so far. So we're doing a podcast on that episode, but we'll do
Like
it
a
on an
last
online.
dance sort of each episode.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we'll try to do it that way. It seems interesting
All
so
right.
far. I like it. Enjoying
Yeah, it's
it.
one of those pods that, the wife enjoys as well.
Yeah. I like that. That was smart. They were able to get two audiences in one.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah, it was smart.
Did I say
Yeah.
pod or I meant to say
Yeah,
docuseries?
doc, yeah.
Yeah. All right, my
Still one of
man.
the biggest what ifs. I don't know if it's they talk about it in the doc, but he was so close to going to Barca, man.
Yeah, they mention it. I
Okay.
won't spoil it. It's the thing is, there's no spoiler. They
Yeah.
mention it, and then he was like, but I always wanted to go to Madrid, and then they don't talk about it again. But you see the press conference where Laporta makes that announcement, and Fergie mentions it, And then Beckham was like, you know, for me, it was always Madrid. So they kind of gloss over it.
Incredible what if.
Yeah.
Because it would mean you wouldn't have gotten Ronaldinho.
Correct.
And maybe we would have. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank God that didn't happen. Because I really enjoy. You'll particularly enjoy the end of this docuseries when, you know, the Camacho, Luxemburgo, Queiroz era. Those are fantastic moments. Fantastic moments. I really enjoy the end of this docuseries.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, look forward to the rest of it. All right, bro. Good chatting.
Much love. Good chatting.
All right, man.
And we'll talk the end of the week.
Okay, man. By the way, I don't know. Yeah, we're going to be back. Patreon.com/churros y tacticas. We're doing an episode this week for our patrons. They can submit questions. And that's for patrons.
1929 to 1940. Coming at you.
Yeah.
It's the next decade.
Awesome. Look forward to it. All right, bro. Good chatting. Peace out.
You too. Ciao. Sports Social Podcast Network.